What do real estate, politics, and Christmas have in common? Find out next on Renewing Your Mind with Dr. R.C. Sproul. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Renewing Your Mind with author and theologian Dr. R.C. Sproul. Location, location, location. Anyone who has ever been involved with real estate has heard this threefold mantra when deciding on a piece of property. This is true for homeowners, business owners, and kings. As important as location is, it's not the ultimate determining factor for the success of a home, business, or nation. Success is also determined by who controls the real estate. The land and landlord relationship is vital. We've seen this drama played out in the nation of Israel with her earthly kings. Today, R.C. will show that the success of our king is not based upon a piece of land or anything else in creation, but on himself. With more on that, here's Dr. Sproul with today's lecture, The King Shall Come.
We continue now preparing for the coming of Christ and the celebration of Advent by looking once more at another Old Testament prophecy that centuries before the birth of Christ looked down the corridors of time and announced his future advent. This passage that we're going to look at today is one that is frequently found on Christmas cards and as the subject of many Christmas sermons. It's found in the book of the prophet Isaiah in chapter 9, beginning in verse 6. Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6 reads as follows, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And of the increase of his government and peace there will be no end. And upon the throne of David and over his kingdom, to order it and establish it with judgment and justice, from that time forward, even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this." Now, this text that is so rich and familiar to us because of its frequent reference in the Christmas season announces the birth of a baby. And this baby is identified in the context of the prophecy of Isaiah as the birth of a king. I mean, that's what we have to see, first of all, that the basic identity of the person who is being prophesied and described in this text is one who is born to be a king. And not just any kind of king, but a king who will follow in the line of King David. We remember that in ancient Israel, the golden age of Israel was ushered in through the monarchy of her second king, King David. And sometimes we forget what a tiny little country, about the state of Rhode Island, Palestine was and is in the ancient world. I'm going to draw a picture of a sort of semicircle here on my blackboard that you can't see, but you can hear as I scratch on it, and you can try to imagine it in your eyes, sort of a horseshoe-looking figure. And this represents what is called the boundaries of the Fertile Crescent. And you recall that on the upper side of this, or the north portion of it, lie two continents, the continent of Europe and the continent of Asia. And inside my little horseshoe is the Mediterranean Sea. And then to the south side of the horseshoe is the continent of Africa. Now, if we go to the right end portion, the closed portion of our horseshoe, or to the eastern edge of it, we see a little ribbon of real estate. Further to the east of that is arid desert. Now, this tiny little ribbon of real estate formed a land bridge that connected three continents. And in the ancient world, whoever controlled this little land bridge controlled the commerce of the time, because the caravans that did the business transactions in antiquity would travel from Asia and Europe down into Africa and back again. And so the geopolitical significance of this tiny ribbon of real estate called Palestine, or in biblical terms, Israel, was a piece of real estate that was enormously coveted by the world powers. Now, during the reign of David, as I said, the golden age of Israel was ushered in, because under his reign, this tiny little nation became the mouse that roared. It became a leading world power as David extended the boundaries of Israel from Dan to Beersheba. And David established a military power that terrified all of the surrounding nations. And David distinguished himself as a great statesman and political administrator. He introduced one of the most prosperous periods of economy in the nation's history. He also, as we know, was a poet, a musician, and a man after God's own heart. Then, on the death of David, much of his gains were consolidated by his son Solomon, but under Solomon's rule, this gold began to tarnish a little bit. When Solomon committed the atrocious sin of introducing the corvée, which was a slave labor force taken from his own people. And so the statesmanship of his father began to crumble under this oppressive dimension of his regime, and upon his death, the gold turned to rust, and the kingdom was divided with the sons Rehoboam and Jeroboam. And the future history of the divided kingdom reads in part like a rogues gallery of wicked monarchs. And so the people longed for a return to the golden age, when somehow the glory that was Israel would be revived, when one would come like David. The prophet Amos made the prophecy that in the work of the Messiah, the fallen booth of David would be established again, or would be set right. If you can see this little booth or throne tilted over on its side with the wild vegetation covering it over as it was decaying and rotting and mildewing and so on, the kingdom was in shambles. And yet God promised that a day would come when a king like David would reign once more. Now, much of the messianic prophecy of the Old Testament focused on this king who would come, the shepherd king who would come and rule like David. And here in the passage of Isaiah, we hear the announcement of the birth of that promised king. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. Notice that this is not simply the joyful announcement of a particular set of parents, where the husband and the wife, or the father and the mother, are celebrating the announcement of the impending birth of their baby. But this is a child that is to be born for the nation. Unto us a son is born. Unto us a child is to be given. And then we read, the government will be upon his shoulder. This immediately identifies in the text that this is prophetic with respect to the birth of a king, one upon whose shoulders will be born the government of the nation. Can't help but think of the ancient image in mythology in the non-Hebrew world of the portrait of Atlas, hunched over, bearing the world on his shoulders. Because to be a king, to reign over any nation, not to mention to reign over all nations, is to assume an enormous burden upon one's back or upon one's shoulder. But the image here is of the king who will be born to the people, who will carry the nation on his shoulders. Now, then the writer turns his attention to describe some of the qualifications and the character of this king. And his name will be called. Now, in my translation, it reads like this: Wonderful, comma, Counselor, comma, Mighty God, comma, Everlasting Father, comma, Prince of Peace. Now, one of the difficulties we have in translation is the problem of affixing punctuation, because the original text didn't have punctuation. And so these commas that we find in the various printed texts of the Bible represent usually an editorial decision among translators on how to break up the structure of the sentences that are there. I personally think there's a misplaced comma here. And by saying this, I run the risk of exciting everybody's wrath who loves the song, His Name is Wonderful, because that song is based on this comma, where we take one of the aspects of the Messiah who is to come and we celebrate His glory by saying, His name is wonderful. Well, His name is, of course, wonderful, and we have no quarrel with that. But I think that what Isaiah is talking about here is not simply that his name will be called Wonderful, but it will be Wonderful Counselor. And that which is wonderful is not just something that is nice or something that is pleasant or desirable, but in the original meaning of the term wonderful, the word meant full of wonder. Astonishing, amazing, something that evokes awe in those who watch the performance. And what Isaiah is saying here about this king who is to come is that he will be a counselor par excellence. He will be a counselor whose wisdom will amaze and astonish. And it's also interesting here that this one who is coming to fulfill the function as king is described as this awe-inspiring, filled with wonder, purposeful counselor, because the term that is used for counselor is the term that was usually used in Old Testament times to describe not the king, but the person who held the highest position of counsel to the king, that is, the king's most trusted advisor. But in this sense, we have the king himself not needing the trusted advisor to teach him how to rule in justice and in wisdom, because wisdom is in himself in full measure. Now, very indirectly, this suggestion of the coming Messianic king to be one who is a wonderful counselor suggests, as I said, in a very distant way, a fulfillment of another strand of Messianic expectancy in the Old Testament, wherein the Messiah will ultimately be called the wisdom of God. We remember in the 8th chapter of Proverbs the celebration of the wisdom of God that is with God from the beginning and comes from His presence, and wisdom is personified as if He were a real person. And in the New Testament, that personification of wisdom goes beyond the boundaries of normal Hebrew poetry to speak about a real, concrete incarnation of divine wisdom when the Word is made flesh. And so this king is going to be a king who incorporates the fullness of wisdom. Now, if you lived in Israel for very long after the kingdom was divided, you began to hunger and thirst for a king who showed even a modicum of wisdom. The history of the monarchy in the divided kingdom may be described as the history of foolishness. But this king who will come after the likeness of David will be a wonderful counselor. Well, what else is said about the messianic shepherd king who is to come? He will be called Mighty God. Now, there is an allusion here in the language that is used with respect to the mightiness, not simply to God's omnipotence in general or in the abstract. But here we have another image that is frequently used with respect to God in the Old Testament, and this image is now transferred to the Messiah, that the Mighty God relates to one who is invincible in warfare. Now keep in mind that David distinguished himself as a warrior of the highest degree before he ascended to the throne of Israel. He was Israel's mighty warrior. Saul has slain his thousands, David his tens of thousands. And so this king who will be like David will be a mighty warrior God, a God who will fight triumphantly for his people. He will be a conquering king. Now you begin to see why so many of the people in the time of Jesus had their eyes focused exclusively on a Messiah who would be a political revolutionary, who would drive the hated Romans out of the land, because of this fierce sense of expectation among the people of the political deliverer who would come. But the battle that Christ wins in his reign transcends the struggles that take place on this planet in ordinary combat or warfare, because his victory is a victory over the cosmic forces. This mighty God king is the one who leads captivity captive and conquers the most fierce enemies of the people, the enemies of Satan, of hell, and of death itself. Well, it goes on to say that he will be called the Everlasting Father and the Prince of Peace. The Everlasting Father is a strange title to give to a king. We don't think of a king as a father, and yet the character of God in his reign over his people is expressed in this image, particularly in the New Testament, of fatherhood. That the king is not to rule over his subjects in order to oppress them, to tyrannize them, or to exploit them for his own purposes. But the king in Israel, when the monarchy was first established, was supposed to be God's substitute for the nation. He was to rule over the nation as a father rules over the house, displaying the love of God as well as the administration of God, the care and nurture of God for his family. And as a father pitieth his children, so God pities those who are humble before him. And so this king will not be a king who is a politician concerned only about his own prosperity, but he's a king who will be a father to the people. And of course, the adjectival descriptive term here of the father is everlasting. The new David, the new king, will have a kingdom that will not rust, will not decay, will not fall away, but will reign forever and ever. And isn't it strange that we have the connection here in this description of this king who will be born is one who not only is a mighty warrior of God, but he is the Prince of Peace. Because the purpose of his warfare is to end warfare, to end conflict, and to bring the peace of the nations, the healing of the nations, and above all, peace with God. All of these things are wrapped up in one who is to come, and his reign shall be forever. In this Christmas season, take some time to think about politics. It's hard not to think about politics since it's in the news every day. But where do you put your hope with respect to presidents and kings? What the New Testament tells us is that right now, the person who is the chief executive officer in the cosmos, the person who has ascended to the highest political position in the universe, is this child who was born, this son who was given to us. That right now, we live in a government ruled by Christ. I'm not talking about our national government or our local government, but all local governments, in an ultimate sense, are still under the dominion of Christ. But our supreme ruler right now is the one who has come and fulfilled in every aspect and every detail this description that was penned centuries ago by Isaiah.
That was R.C. Sproul explaining how Isaiah's prophecy finds its fulfillment in King Jesus and reminding us that our hope of true peace, justice, and righteousness are established on the eternal throne of David. You're listening to Renewing Your Mind. Today's message, The King Shall Come, is the fourth lecture in a five-part series entitled Coming of the Messiah. In this series, Dr. Sproul explores the Old Testament and Messianic references to Jesus' advent with careful attention to historical detail and original context. If you're a listener to Renewing Your Mind and you've never contacted us before, then we'd like to send you a free copy of our current radio series, Coming of the Messiah, on two CDs just for calling and telling us the call letters of the radio station where you heard this broadcast. Once again, the Coming of the Messiah CD lecture series is free to anyone contacting us for the first time. If you'd like to purchase the Coming of the Messiah lecture series, it's available for $17. We also recommend another series by Dr. Sproul entitled Messiah is Born. In this series, Dr. R.C. Sproul again examines various Old Testament prophecies about the coming of Christ and explains that Christmas is the celebration of the incarnation of God in the first advent of Christ. The Messiah is Born series is available for $17. To order or request the free offer for first-time callers, call our toll-free number at 1-800-435-4343. That number again is 1-800-435-4343. Or log on to our website at ligonier.org. That's ligonier.org. Timeless biblical truths and the latest in digital technology have come together. Ligonier Ministries is excited to announce the release of Dr. Sproul's lecture series on DVD. For decades, people have been enjoying quality Christian education in the convenience of their own homes and churches using video cassettes produced by Ligonier Ministries. Now you can enjoy that same teaching from Dr. Sproul using the latest in popular media. Each series has been digitized and formatted so that you may enjoy the timely and timeless messages they contain. Added features on the DVDs are free study guides, accessible from any computer, and additional video to enhance your learning experience. Popular study series such as The Holiness of God, Chosen by God, and The Intimate Marriage are now available with many more titles, including the newly released God Alone series. To find out more about available titles, give us a call at 1-800-435-4343 and speak with one of our resource consultants, or go to our online store at ligonier.org.
Before we finish today, let me ask this question. I wonder how many of you out there who listen to this program regularly have never really thought about supporting it financially. I hope that now you would take time to consider that and join us as a supporter of Renewing Your Mind.
That's our time for today's edition of Renewing Your Mind. Thank you for being with us. Join us again tomorrow for the conclusion of our Coming of the Messiah series, when R.C. discusses A Small Town, A Great King. You're listening to Renewing Your Mind, the listener-supported radio outreach of Ligonier Ministries with Dr. R.C. Sproul.